Because they're going to record it. Yeah, there you go. Don't want to look back.
Yeah.
Looking good.
You want to go.
Monique LeRae. This is The Startup with Monique LeRae on LA Talk Radio. Happy Sunday to you. Thank you for joining us again on this beautiful December day. I mean, it's gorgeous outside wherever you guys are. I hope you're having a beautiful day. And we have two amazing guests. I'm so lucky to have them. First of all, I'm excited to have Simone Kazani back, our resident psychotherapist and Pandemic Posse member. Simone, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, and I'm glad to hear it. I'm imagining that, like we left off with the last show, you are pretty busy right now. This is kind of peak season for your practice, perhaps.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I always say yes to that, and at the same time, I think I always tell you that it feels like when you're doing when you're in the world of psychotherapy, there's always a peak season. You know,
yeah.
It might be a bit more visceral right now. You know, people are kind of feeling it in a way that's a bit more obvious and outward, and people feel raw in that kind of way. But the psyche is always going through something. So,
yeah, that'd be your slogan now. The psyche is always going through something. Yeah, and in the mind of entrepreneurs, I can attest that we are always going through something. Good and bad and indifferent, and we're always thinking about the next best thing. And this show is Startup, so I want to get, you know, jump in with Simone here, but I want to just kind of let you guys know that we're tying in psychotherapy with, you know, startups, entrepreneurship. That's the framing of this segment, and we have segments like this with Simone, but also giving ourselves permission to explore a little bit outside of entrepreneurship and how we tick and how come we are the way we are. And I remember weeks back, Simone, you and I touched on that, and we were kind of exploring, like, what makes entrepreneurs tick and kind of why we do the things we do. And I think I shared something about the yard sale or as a kid selling my brother's stuff and the wallet and all that. And thinking back to that, those were some cool, I mean, it wasn't cool for my brother because his stuff got sold, but it was cool for me as an entrepreneur. And the item of the wallet, you know, and the symbolism in that as a young girl. What do you think you can offer in that space for entrepreneurs right now that might be feeling like they're questioning why they begun with such a hard year this year?
Questioning of where they are with their business or why they joined?
Questioning their why. I was saying all that to get back to the why in entrepreneurship. Sometimes we question, like, why am I doing this? Why? I always say, I could have been a school teacher. You know, it would have been easier. So in this year of COVID and all the things that have happened, there might be some entrepreneurs kind of questioning if they're going to go into 2021 and still push forward.
I encourage that, it's not about encouraging someone to stick with exactly what they're doing in their world of entrepreneurship. For me, it's encouraging somebody to stick with what they feel most aligned with. During COVID especially, you're seeing a lot of people right now who just want to take leaps. It's like, okay, I've waited long enough to not do that thing that I've been wanting to do, and now's my chance. And it goes both ways. People who have been trying to build something, and they say, oh, I'm over this. This is not my calling. This is not something that feels right for me. And I have an opportunity to take a dive outside of this and explore something that I feel more aligned with. And I don't feel like I'm constantly battling, trying to get to a place with it that I'm constantly feeling inferior or inefficient, you know? And there are people on the other end who they feel like they're going to double down. They're like, this is the year I'm going to invest in all the parts of myself on this, in this entrepreneurship journey that I've kind of been avoiding, or it's been tedious, or it's, I've been a little scared to take a jump and I didn't want to do it. And there's that person that I collaborate with and I haven't reached out to. And, you know, times of crisis make you kind of appreciate what it would be like to be in a place of stability.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that not being the case. I'm hearing a lot of friends, a lot of associates, a lot of people around saying, you know what, I signed a lease in Sedona, I've never been there, and I'm going for 6 months. Or I'm giving up the house and I'm getting a trailer. Or there's a lot of U-Hauls, you know.
Totally. And how, right? We all have our different, I always bring this up, I think every time we talk, with our different life circumstances, the ability to take a risk also has to, is directly tied to the amount of privilege we have. And that's respected as well.
That's interesting. So you're saying the amount of risk that we're willing to take, holding on to that last statement that really just, that hit me. The amount of risk we're willing to take is directly linked with the privilege that we have in our life.
Well,
collaborate? Yeah.
It have to be, but it can be. I'm just thinking of how easy it is for us to throw in these cliches of take the dive, be aligned with your higher self, the universe will show up for you. It's a beautiful thing to imagine that there's something larger than ourselves that's carrying us through the world. And I don't want to argue with that, but it's really hard to say that to somebody who's really so focused on survival, doesn't have any extra cash flow coming from any family member, who's really one of those people who knows what it's like to completely rely on themselves and not have much cushion. And that's a different kind of dive. That person is making a sacrifice in that moment, and they still can make a sacrifice. But I'm sensitive to that issue a little bit. You know, like, we need courage, but not in a way where people are ashamed for not being able to show up themselves in the way they want to because of things that are outside of their control sometimes.
That's a really good point, a safe space for entrepreneurs to move about. And I love how you put it. It's kind of a, and this term keeps coming up, it's a grit. It is a grittier thing, because you're right. If you don't have the luxury of a support system financially, emotionally, physically, mentally, whatever you might need or, you know, prefer, to be comfortable for those dives, it is a grittier dive, especially in a pandemic. It's a grittier thing. And I think the right equation, that's where the fun is, to kind of strip away the layers on that. You know, the equation of what goes into, like, if you look at it like a jar and you're putting different colored sand in the jar to make a pretty collage of sand in a jar, what mixes of sand are you putting in your jar to make you the entrepreneur that you are today? Because you have different elements, but I know grit is in there, no doubt. No matter who you are, you have to have some grit as an entrepreneur.
Remember that mouse pad you had that said hustle? I mean, when we talk about grit, we're really talking about, like, trust, right? In something that might not even be showing us results, but you wake up. You know, one of my favorite quotes, I love, I'm like, I just love quotes, I feel like.
You do, the quote away.
In sessions, sometimes they just feel so relevant. But there's this one I remember hearing, and Kobe would always put it. He would always put it on his Mamba mentality thing. He said, "When nothing seems to help, I go and look at a stone cutter hammering away at his rock, perhaps 1,000 times, without so much as a crack in it." And he says, "But on the 1,001st blow, it will split in two. It'll split in two, and I'll know it was not that blow that did it, but all that had come before." It's like this trust in the grind, and that something, you know, that something is happening, but we don't have a good measuring stick when it comes to ourselves and growth. And, you know, we need to remember, you know, the image I was trained with, and I love sharing with others, is we're not talking about a circle here where you feel like you keep ending up in the same place. It feels like a circle, but it's actually a spiral. So you feel like you're going in circles, but you're moving upward, and taking you a little closer and closer, maybe, to what it is you want.
These are really great anecdotal things that you add in, and that Kobe reference is a really good one, and I'm glad you brought that one up, because it sometimes does feel like you're chipping away at a stone with a fork. I mean, or a spork, or even a spork. I mean, it's just, what are you doing? What did you say?
Useless is the spork issue.
Yeah, or chopsticks. I mean, it feels like you're doing it with nothing. And the spiral up, though, what a great visual. I think the pandemic if you guys are entrepreneurs out there, which I think most of the crowd are, and I think that you guys, in this moment when you're worried about how you're going to pay the rent and how you're going to pay the bills, this is a really great moment to evolve your brand. And where's the energy coming from is what I ask. Who's in my corner? Who's for me? Who's for the next step of me, evolution of my brand? Who gets it? So when you ask yourself that, then you can move the energy and focus on who's coming towards you. And you don't have to go up the hill so hard. And then meet, have a meeting of the minds maybe and go, what's your 12-month vision right now? Let's revamp, you know? Have a 5-year vision. What's your 12-month vision right now? You as a brand, how can we help each other? How can we move together?
Yeah.
I think that's a conversation a lot of small businesses and startups should probably be having if they feel like they're by themselves or stuck.
You're right. Isn't it kind of like the people who are in your corner? It's kind of like your parents, let's say. If you have parents that were always, you know, you give them an idea you were excited about and they were always sharing with you the parts of it that would not work.
Oh.
In your voice, that tends to first go to what might not work. Even though, you know, it might help you in the long run in some ways, that might happen. There's something to what you're saying, like when to surround yourself with people who don't just kind of focus on the hill you have to climb, but just dream a little bit about what could become, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think too, we need to like gravitate towards that. There's this thing, I mean, I'm guilty of it, where you kind of, and you have to clean that out. I think I've touched on this before. We have to clean out your closets emotionally as an entrepreneur and really be able to receive, because you're asking. There's an ask there as an entrepreneur, constant ask. So if you're cleaning out that closet to be able to receive, your closet's open, it's fresh, it's got space. But if you got emotional baggage in your closet about receiving, your ask is going to sound different to the people you're asking to, because there's a level of confidence with that ask. There's a level of, I'm going to accept your support. So that's another layer, I think, that some of us could kind of work on this winter, you know, making room in that closet and identifying who's on your team, adding value, coming together, and have some confidence in your ask.
I like that. I like that. There's something about being open to receiving, and not everything has to be, you know, because isn't it true that sometimes, I don't know if this is your experience, but it certainly is mine at times, and not just with entrepreneurship, with life, with exercise, with anything I'm learning. If I'm not grinding, or I'm not feeling like there's an intense amount of work or uphill battle going on, sometimes there's an element of, am I actually doing anything?
I know. Yes.
Like cycle, like I gotta be killing it, otherwise all the results are because I'm not just spending this many hours on it, when it's like, oh, okay, it'd be nice to have a space where it's like your success is not directly tied with how obsessive you might be about the process.
Right. No, it's true. Like, it shouldn't have to be such a grind that, you know, it is that guilty pleasure that, wow, that was really easy, that must have been a fluke. No, it's supposed to be smooth. It's supposed to be, you're supposed to be in alignment.
At least,
you're adding value. If you're doing something of value and you can recognize your network and who's up for you, it should be smooth. And there should be a dance that you're doing with your network.
Yeah.
Add value. Mm-hmm.
There's a mythological story around this, the story of Sisyphus. I think it's an interesting one. And Sisyphus was condemned to pushing a boulder up a mountain.
Oh, God.
For eternity. You know? So you get to almost the top of the boulder, it would fall down, and you'd have to start all over again. And it's right. Like, I think that's a beautiful image when you're in the thick of it, that we shouldn't always be in that place of feeling like we need to be pushing a boulder. You're right. There's a time in which it's like, okay, if this is something that I'm excited about and I put my time into and it's meaningful for me, there should be some sense of flow, some sense of ease in it at some point, you know?
Yeah, some allowing. The art of allowing and some ease. But again, you have to be on board with yourself to give yourself permission to even do that, which is the thing. You know, you have to let yourself have it, you know? And, Yeah, so that's good. What do you have planned for the holidays? What are you cooking this year?
I think this holiday season is just more of a time of reflection for me. With all the different holidays we've gone through, you know, until I really feel like this COVID situation is managed. I guess we each have our personal opinion about COVID, and for me, until it really feels managed, I'm just spending the time with myself a lot.
Sure.
Feeling meaningful for me, which is building my practice, which is playing my tar instrument, which is taking care of my body the best way I know how, and keeping connections with people that are important to me, you know. And I'm definitely brainstorming a lot about different things right now and business ideas. Nothing I can share yet, but in the works.
We love a scoop and a first look, so you let us know, because that's exciting, Simon. I think that you're right on the money. I mean, a lot of people, you know, had to change their holiday this year or didn't have one. Excuse me. And I think I just got a notification. I usually go skiing at Christmas, and I think the hotels are closing now. I got a notification from the hotel in Big Bear. So it's a different year, and I wonder what we're going to all be up to this time next year. I wonder what it's going to look like, you know?
How it'll inform what we do next year, and if it will. I don't know, maybe the pressure we kind of put on ourselves around these times of years to get things done in a very particular kind of way. And maybe I'm hoping it'll kind of it'll be a new narrative of some kind when it comes to holidays, when it comes to what we expect of ourselves from these times.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. I like it. We made it through Thanksgiving, everybody, so we can make it through Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa, and anything else that we got going on that I forgot. What do we want to leave the listeners and viewers with from a recap, do you think, this year? Because you joined the pandemic, Posse. I want to say right after COVID started being prominent in the area. I feel like you started at the end of the first quarter, but I could be wrong. What do we want to leave with the entrepreneur listeners, viewers about this year?
For me personally, if I'm thinking, because I want it, if I'm going to bring something like that, I want it to have meaning to this particular outlet. So what does this particular outlet want, which seems like it's focused on abundance and focused on creating a life of stability for themselves? And I think there's something really important about reiterating the importance of self-talk, which is a very cool idea, right? It's not like this deep spiritual, psychological, like, thing of how we talk to ourselves. I mean, you can go more deeply into it, but I think there's a very fundamental importance in being kind with yourself through the process of change and through the process of growth that comes from wanting to be an entrepreneur. Because it's a very hard battle, that it's an uphill battle for most. And for a lot of people, it's tied with their self-value. And to remind yourself, what are the things you offer in the world outside of what you're creating? Not everything tied to what your final creation looks like. That's part of the journey. But to stay in touch with what are the things about yourself that you enjoy? What are the things about yourself you want to work on? What are your relationships like? You know, what moves you? What are, you know, these are things I think feeling alive is really important. And I could give something to leave with that has to do with entrepreneurship specifically, but I think what comes up more for me is the pressure that comes around it and wanting people to give themselves a bit more love through that process.
Good. That's beautiful. Absolutely. What do your relationships look like? I can piggyback on that thought and even push it a little further and draw COVID into that. We can probably all say, without a shadow of a doubt, we know where we stand in our relationships after this year. We know. You know, we've had 10, almost 11 months of this, and you know where you stand with people. And that's a hard pill to swallow, be it good or bad. You know where you stand with people in business this year.
That is tough. I hear you. I guess for me, my experience with that is like, because I'm also a person that I like to reach out a lot and know the people in my life that I'm thinking about them. But I'm also learning everyone responds to trauma differently. And sometimes where we imagine people show up for us or where we stand for people is actually a reflection of kind of their ability to show up in the world the way they know how.
Interesting.
We're moving through a trauma, you know, people have such an, there's such a range of ways people respond to complex trauma and universal trauma like this. Some people retreat in a particular kind of way. Some people I think would not want to reach out to me per se, because I might want to have a very open conversation about what's happening and that.
Oh, they don't want to do a deep dive. Yeah. They don't want to. Yeah. You make a good point. So it's not one broad stroke. Maybe if you haven't heard from anyone in your family or friends, they're also parenting, running a business, being a lover, the teacher, cleaning the house, being the cook, managing COVID if they have sick loved ones. So they have, I didn't expect much from my friends with kids because they're busy. They're busy. But they're busy.
Good ones. Those were really good.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot, you know. Yeah, I like that you balanced out my thought there. And what I wonder, you know, what will be the 2021? Because you know everybody's like, oh, you can do it. It's a new year, and then you write your list of intent. I call it list of intentions or list of goals rather than resolutions. List of choices. I wonder what that list is going to look like for 2021. Are we going to be a little more trepidatious about being so bold in our list? I saw a meme that says, the first rule of 2021, don't talk about 2020. You know, like Fight Club, you know?
The higher we go with this thing, the farther the fall sometimes. So there's this really powerful thing that there was viral condition in the universe. And if we imagine that we're going to, like, come, it's just like a New Year's resolution on a larger scale, right? Like, if you're like, I'm going to come back and hit a good first day, and it doesn't happen exactly that way, they're going to be feeling like, oh, wait, I had all these expectations to flip this year for everything to turn. And maybe it won't necessarily work that way. Maybe there's going to be a transition process.
Right. I like it. Yeah. It's just an even keel, like, you didn't go too high, didn't go too low. Let's just calm the waters. Let's just tread.
Yeah, I just hear a lot of like, oh, we're going to take 2021 back. And I don't know who's taking what, but I don't feel I'm in a position of power, you know?
Right. I'm coming from a lower level.
Yeah. You go a little high sometimes with these things. And for me, it's like, okay, I got to pull back. Otherwise,
that's awesome, Vaughn. I don't know what I'm taking back. Well, you know, the fact that we are really, I mean, I want to just leave it. I think this is a good place to leave it. We have a few more minutes. Let's plug you first before we finish the final thought here. Where can people find you? Reintroduce yourself and your title and where they can find you if they want to have a chat.
Well, I practice psychotherapy. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. So right now I'm doing all my sessions on Zoom, but I do have a home practice as well on the west side of Los Angeles if anyone's interested in reaching out. They can find me on To Be Human Psychotherapy on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as Salman Kazani LMFT, Licensed Marriage and Therapist. They can pay me at three. And then my website, SalmanKazani.com, it's literally right in the process of being transferred right now. So if you go on it today, you might not see anything. But if you go on in a couple of days, you'll see that. I'm in the process of completely redesigning that with the video and everything to give people a better understanding of exactly what they're getting from me. So,
hey, you're leveling up at the end of 2020. So check it out around this time next week. His website will be fully transferred and revised going into the new year. So give it a, you know, check back in about a week. And what would you say marriages this year, up or down?
Marriages? I don't understand the question. Like how they're going?
Yeah, how are they going? More and more divorces, less, more engagements, less, yeah.
You know, man, marriage, from my view of it,
from your gathering of your experience.
Yeah, and there's going to be tension for people who struggle with what it's like to be closer with each other in a way they're not used to. And for some people, I'm sure that's a huge growing process. And for others, I'm sure it's a growing process, but maybe they've chosen to be, it's brought them further apart. But I don't know how to speak about it in any, like, all-around way. I think it's just more intriguing than it is up or down. It's more like, okay, everyone's going through the works of reestablishing and renegotiating and recommunicating what they want from their relationship and what they're okay with.
That's smart, okay? Renegotiating, because I know marriages that work when the guy is gone 50% of the time or the lady's gone 40%, and now everyone's hunkered in, and it's been interesting to see and hear and watch. Like, some of these relationships are not making it, and some of them are.
Yeah, it's chemistry. You're taking two chemicals, you're putting them together, and it'll be interesting how they interact.
Yeah, that's awesome. He doesn't just help entrepreneurs, everybody. He does relationships as well, so that's why I thought I'd ask.
I work with children, I work with teenagers, I work with couples, and I do group therapy. So I try to keep my psychotherapy practice open for all demographics.
Good, I like that you're casting a wide net there, because a lot of people... Suicide, this is a little darker. People feeling completely out of alignment and lost. A lot of people are saying mental health is on the rise. Mental health issues are on the rise because people feel helpless and cooped up. Are you seeing that feeling that might be up a little bit this year with the pandemic? Or
maybe, but here's the thing, how I was trained and... The viewpoint I really, really enjoy comes to us is that it's something in yourself that wants to die. It's something that's trying. There's a dying process taking place, whether that's the death of a kind of loneliness, or that's the death of a kind of angst, or it's the death of a relationship or a trauma or something that seems to have been, you can't quite get it out of the body or out of the system. So that's just one way of conceptualizing it. That I, not to take anything away from people who really feel like their body needs to go, but that seems to be really helpful for a lot of people during this time of like, oh, wait, I'm not focusing on ending my life, but on changing a circumstance in myself that feels unbearable.
And that I like that. Yeah. Yes. That's got to be relatable to a lot of people. and if we are these complicated beings with, all these different things going on, that's not an illogical suggestion of the way to approach it, I don't think. But I'm not the psychotherapist. Simon is, you guys. And Simon Kazani, you can find him on the west side of L.A. He's part of our pandemic posse. He checks in with us at least once a month if we can get him, and I know he's super busy right now. I want to leave it with something that you think came out of 2021 that was positive and in the business space, in something for business entrepreneurs or people on their own.
I'll keep it broad, but I'll say it's been the year of imagination. There's going to be a lot of rebirth and a lot of ideas coming out of this this time. It feels like we're dealing with a lot of death, but I'm sure that there's a lot of really imaginative ideas I'm seeing out there, and it's I think it's because of the tension everyone's been dealing with, they're finding opportunity in that.
I love it. What's that? Is that a doll right there, Simon?
Oh, that's my. I love this doll. This is so Amachi, who's she's known as the Indian hugging saint, and I used to see her once a year in Los Angeles, and she hugs 5,000 in a weekend, and there's a lot behind it and what it symbolizes, but whenever I see her, I feel so good, so I like to have the doll there. Just makes...
I've got to order one. I got to get on Amazon. I'm sure you can't get it on Amazon, but I want to learn more about that, and thank you so much for joining us today. I can't wait to connect with you again really soon. If I don't see you before, happy holidays. Thank you for making time.
I always appreciate the conversation.
Me too. Cheers. All right, you guys. That was Simon Kazani, our psychotherapist, friend of the show, Pandemic Posse member. I'm waiting to see if our next guest is in queue. Roman, what's going on? Type to me and tell me what we've got. While we're waiting for that, I want to say a big shout out to our sponsors. Give a shout out to Michael Solberg Family Wines, Leah Solberg, second generation winemaker over at Michael Solberg Family Wines. Thank you so much for all your support and love for the show and everything we're trying to do and doing. Also, I'm going to give a shout out to one of our new partners, and they're partnered with us to host us for the New Year's Eve live streaming of our extended pandemic posse, excuse me, pandemic project documentary on the Roku channel through BUTV and J1 Productions and the Lower Bill Company. And that's New Year's Eve. I want to say a shout out to Casa del Camino. Wow, I'm tongue-tied to get it today, you guys. A shout out to El Casa del Camino in Laguna Beach, an historic hotel known for the rooftop bar, known for their sangrias, known for the view. Just absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for the support. Ronan, do we have our lovely guest on, our next one? Oh, Techie! All right, everybody. Jackie Pittman! Woo-hoo! Hi! Look at you! You look amazing! I miss you!
Well, that's what happens when you're almost 60.
What is going? What is in the water over there, sure.
It's Encino water.
Encino, excuse me, darling. Encino water. I've got my
water.
Got my water.
Yeah, and me too. Crystal Glazer. Hi, Mama. How are you?
Aw, it's good to see you. You look beautiful. Happy belated birthday. I cannot believe you're almost... We're going to just say 50.
I'm 59 this year. Yeah.
Yes. I still love you. How does it feel?
You know, 2020 is pretty fucked up, but...
Pretty fucked up. We can curse. We're a .com show, Jackie.
Thank you. As like 2020 has been rough on his sister. Yeah, it's all right. I've just been working so much and staying 100% distracted. 100% blessed that I've had a job. So I'm good. I have no complaints.
Jamaican got 5 job, mom.
Why you
talking about my Jamaican friends?
Talking about my people like that.
So, in case people have been living under a rock for the last 20 years, 25, 30 years, I mean, how long ago was Studs? Okay, you have to...
1991.
All right, so I need to do a full introduction of yourself, and I know that you have a fan club that's watching. So, please tell people... Yes, ma'am.
Oh, God. I own a reality TV casting company called Pittman Casting. And yes, and I own a production company called Party Pit Productions. And I started 30 years ago on shows like Love Connection and Studs. And I'm known mostly, I cast Big Brother 2. Then I went on to become a producer, and I co-executive produced and developed the original Extreme Makeover with the plastic surgery. And then I co-executive produced and created Next, MTV's Next dating show where the kids were on the bus and really cool and hip. And I always tell people I did that for my own dating life. I didn't have a bus. I didn't have a bus.
But you had an apartment.
But I could have, yeah. So there was that. I then launched my casting company after the economy crashed because I got tired of people telling me how much money I could make by working on one show. So I launched a company. I now have about 40 employees and a couple of the shows that we do, which are popular that people know, and COVID related, unfortunately. We do Let's Make a Deal, which is on CBS, O&O syndicated, and we do Price is Right, which is on CBS, O&O's syndicated, Fremantle Projects, and we do Kids Say the Darndest Things. So that was with Tiffany Haddish, and we do that. And I've done a myriad of other shows over the years. We've done Face Off for 14 seasons. So.
Come on, let's say it. Face Off, everybody. I mean, that is a show for right now. We need to do Eyelashes On. Can we do a COVID show? I mean, God bless our Muslim sisters, man. They have the eye game. They're on it.
Girl, I was in Dubai for 12 days, and those Muslim sisters do have their game. They would be all covered up until they went to the mall, and then they whip that shit off, and you see Fendi and everything else. Like, go girl. Go girl.
Yes. So if we were to stand here and honestly read off your resume, people would go, oh, I love this shit. Oh, my God, I love this show. Oh, my God, I love this show. And they don't really get to see us because, you know, us, we're used to behind it. The fact that my ass is in front of a camera right now must be shocking you because, you know, I love to go into a Target and look haggard and have my sunglasses on. I mean, you know, this is abnormal for us. But once in a while, we have to shed a little light on what we do, who we are. But we can just go ahead and give you the kudos for over two decades of really amazing programming.
Thank you. It's been fun. It's been an experience, and I've been blessed the entire time. And, you know, more than anything, I've had the luxury of working with friends, mostly because we all came up together and on shows that I never in a million years would think I'd have a chance to work with at networks. That I've worked on every single network, and even some of the streamers that have come up, like Netflix, and I haven't done anything for Amazon yet. I think that's next to go.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
But well, the big ones, I've had the luxury, and it's been fun, yeah.
Let me just give you guys a quick little background, and then I want to go talk about the Rome show. And we, speaking of the dog Rome.
Oh, my God, I forgot. I created the Rome for love on Bravo. That was amazing.
Yes, we're going to dip in that next because this is what I want to inspire entrepreneurs that could draw from their real life to do. But I know Jackie Pittman from her colleague, Joanne Gabrick-Schumann. She and Jackie took a chance on this hot, fun mess. And
hot girl.
She seen me grow up, though. I mean, you got me when I was really young, so I'm now 42.
Oh.
They got me when I was about 20-something. There was a lot of growth that needed to happen, but they got me when I was really ripe and a novice and worked with me, and I always will look up to these ladies. They put a chance on me and trusted me on the road somehow, and we've evolved. And, so I always have love and admiration for you. So to have you on my show is like, this is my boss, you guys. Okay.
This is
my boss.
Oh, nobody's boss. Nobody's boss.
Well, you used to be, and I just love and adore forever. And you always reached back out. Like, even if I wasn't on a show with you, or like God knows where I was, you were just like, "Mo, come to the production," and you created a family vibe. And I really love it. You brought the family in to work with you, JR, and everybody. So
hey, if, you know, you got to take care of your family.
Yeah. Well, that's that Jersey girl anyway. I mean,
true that. Yeah.
So if you're from the East Coast and you manage to $200 or something crazy and one ponytail, I mean, one braid.
You're killing me right now, Mom.
Jackie, yeah. I did it for you.
I got you. Well, I'm wearing this today. Tomorrow might be something else. So
hey, it's fun to be you. Nice.
Yeah. $200 was saying a lot. It was $127.
Okay, right. And that number, you've got to play the 1 and the 27 and roulette now.
I do. That's what, you know, I gamble.
I know. You still have to go to Vegas.
With life, I gamble. Can't go to Vegas, right? But it's only gamble with life. It's all about risk, Mo. You know, your whole life has got to be about risk. You have to take risks. You'll never, ever succeed or achieve whatever dream that you've ever dreamt if you don't take risk. So.
Yeah, and I think that someone, you know, that story that we run in our head, like, oh, you can only do this, and then, you know, we do it sometimes and we don't realize, and I've been doing that. I've been like, no, I'm going to divorce that story in my head, and I don't really need to, I'm going to go for it. What's the worst that can happen? I can be broke again?
Okay. What?
$127? Okay.
Yeah, worst can happen, you make
$140. All right, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So I would love for you to, speaking along the lines of taking a risk, Jackie is transparent about her love life to a point where even with Next, which I had the pleasure of being casting director on for 2 or 3 seasons, transparency, shout out to Melissa Miller, shout out to Angela Bosworth, shout out to Delphine Lauren Porter, shout out to everybody.
That's right.
Yeah. So I worked for Jackie in that capacity as well, but you drew your love life with that show next, and then Dismissed was before preceded that. But now more recently, and more notably perhaps in this time, is To Rome for Love on Bravo. Yeah. Tell us about this show, how you named the dog Rome, how you fell in love in Italy, you got laid a lot, and then you pitched a show, and then you took all of us, grabbed everybody from LA and drug them to Rome.
I did. Oh, my God. That, you know, truly, the inspiration was for that show. I was a development exec at Lightheart at the time when I saw the movie Under the Tuscan Sun. And I fell in love with it. I mean, what I fell in love with on that show, on that movie, was how much she fell in love with herself. And then I started to think, and I'm like the dating show queen, you know, from Love Connection to Studs to The Big Date to, you know, all Next to all the myriad of dating shows, Sex Wars, all the myriad of relationship dating shows that I've done in my past. I've always, and I still create dating shows. But the one thing that I noticed, which was a void, was Black women on dating shows. And being a casting director and that being my mainstay in most cases, you know, I was responsible for putting Black faces on television. And I was just like, okay, why aren't there any shows where Black women are this focal point, living the fantasy and not throwing drinks on each other's face and there's enough to go around and, you know, and getting past the point of life is hard, we have to settle, or we may never, ever get married or date again. So I wanted to, like, tackle those stereotypes. So I partnered with a company called Asylum, and I pitched it on paper, and they got it instantly. And
I'm great over there.
Yes. And then they treated me so well, and you know, I felt like a true partner. And Bravo championed the show. I was blown away that Bravo was even interested in the show, considering it was a little different. I mean, I didn't want to be on the air what I had always seen in other Black shows, from Basketball Wives to Housewives to, you know, they're always bickering and fighting and throwing drinks at people and disrespecting each other. And it was just kind of like not what I wanted. I really wanted, and this is the truth, in a conversation I had with Bravo, I was like, okay, I really feel like the women that we choose have gone through enough in their relationships. This needs to be fun fantasy and beautiful for them, an experience that they would never in a million years have, most not ready for, because most of our girls weren't ready for it, but and that's just in life in general. We're never really ready. You know, when our man shows up for us, you can only pray you're ready. That's never going to happen. You're never ready.
But I do. I don't know.
And so I wanted to choose women who had questions about their own purpose in relationships and had, you know, suffered through some shit, had some story. And so, you know, because honestly, it's like, I didn't want someone who was like 21, 20 years old and had never dated or dated in high school. And that was the extent of their love story. And so we chose women with depth, you know, and, you know,
they were beautiful women, and they came from all different backgrounds. Like, you did a root. Casting is the key, as you always
say. It is. But, you know, there was a big girl in there who I love my girl. And she and I, you know, we bonded. Because I'm a big girl, you know. And it was like, she was representing me. You know, she's divorced, had multiple children. So nobody wanted her as a single mom with kids. You know, I had a woman who had been married on television, you know, Gina Neely, on TV, married 20-something years with two adult daughters, and felt, I got to represent for my daughters. They have to see that I'm happy eventually. I can't just, like, you know, throw away my life, you know, and my happiness, too. So she walked out of the marriage after 20-something years. You know, we had a a young woman who's 25, you would think she doesn't have a problem finding men. It wasn't about that. It was about the relationship she had with her father. And we forget how important our relationships as young Black women, Black girls, women in general, the relationships we have with our dad is so important. And unfortunately, in, you know, in Black America, many of us suffer from not having that male figure as a role model, which takes us back to slavery days. So, you know,
yeah, we saw the Willie Lynch thing all day.
Right. So, you know, it was, we had a myriad of great women, you know, single moms, you know, and they went to Italy and they went with all their damn baggage. Luggage and baggage.
Emotional bags and baggage.
Emotional bags and physical bags. But I will tell you a thing that was really fascinating for me, because I flew to Italy a few months before Bravo approved it, you know, the show, to go to series, and we did a proof of concept. And I flew to Italy, and I was like, the only, you know, here I am, the casting director, the executive producer, creator of the show. So I was executive producer and casting simultaneously.
You're the art department, you're the money, you're the travel agent.
But, you know, our development execs were executive producers. It was like five of us who went over for the proof of concept to shoot something to show that this could really be. And when I got there, I was single, and we were trying to decide if we wanted to incorporate social media into the show, because that's like all the rage. And so I turned on my Tinder account once I landed in Rome, and I literally matched 92 times in 3 days. 92. Match. No. Mo. Match. That means I swiped right, too.
Okay, now. Okay. Now I'm thinking Bumblebee. Now I'm thinking Bumblebee, and that's got me all stumped.
No, that means he swiped right, and I swiped right, too. And so, 92 times in 3 days. And so, it is another world over there. And, you know, there are so many people who would say Italian men fetishize Black women. And I would beg to differ. Look, they're no different than any other man. They want it too. They don't have African American women in Rome, like walking around here in Encino. They have African women, but the African women don't assimilate in society. So you wouldn't walk into a restaurant and see a family of Africans eating in an Italian restaurant. They stay in their own part of town. They eat their own food. Then they don't assimilate into society. You do see African men working in town, but you rarely see African women in town. And so, unless they're from another country or they're visiting. So we would walk down the street, and I would have random guys. We're location scouting, and random guys would, like, leave their table at their open-air cafe and come up to me and put their hands on my face and tell me how beautiful I was. And I wanted that. I wanted that for the women who were coming over for the show. They needed that because they forgot how beautiful they were.
Yeah. Wow. And I bet you, you know, that had to be such a cultural shock in a good way. But then, you know, because here we go. And we've got just a couple minutes left. So, you know, the Black girl guilt and the colorism of it. And I'm sure you got some shade of, oh, you had to go over to Italy and go to the white man. And it's just like this whole other thing we got to think about.
Right. Sure did. It wasn't that. You know, look, you'll get it. You'll get people who have that. And look, trust me, I got a myriad of shows. I got a show for Black people right here. So you don't have to go to Italy to find your man. And what people missed about the entire experience was it wasn't about them going to Italy to find a man. Hell, it's kind of hard to bring a man 6,000 miles away from where you live, and he can't get a green card, and you can't get a thing over there. So it wasn't about that. It was about finding love of yourself. It was about looking in the mirror, not having to pile on all the makeup, and walking down the street and someone saying to you, you are so beautiful, just the way you are. And here in the U.S., I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It's far and few between. Because here in the U.S., we have our men sometimes have a completely different view of beauty, you know? They just have a different view of beauty. And it takes us way back. Like, you got to be mixed up with 14 different things sometimes to be looked at as a beautiful Black woman, you know? And it's like,
step out. Yeah. You guys.
And it wasn't that. And, you know, it was just, they just needed to find love of self. So when the girls all came back, they loved themselves. You know, they were no longer wrapping sweaters around their waist to hide their ass. You know, they embraced how beautiful they were and all the extra curves they may have had. You know, because it's kind of hard to compete against beautiful women like you, Mo.
Listen, and you know it comes from within, and that's what's beautiful about you, and you're taking them to reevaluate and rediscover it. You guys need to follow Jackie Pittman, Party Pit. She's always up to something hot. If you're watching it on TV or you're streaming it, it's probably because she's fucking created it.
And audition for Let's Make a Deal or Price is Right. This is the first time in history you'll actually get to audition to be a contestant, because they usually pick people out of 300 or so in the audience.
We're going to have you back. We're out of time. Where can they connect with you and apply?
LMADcasting.com. Let's make a deal. LMADcasting.com or PriceIsRightCasting.com.
You guys, shout out to Jackie Pittman. Thank you for making time. You're coming back. We have so much to talk about. We're going to wine country, too, which we should totally document.
Yes.
If someone wants to know, cheers. If someone wants to know. If someone wants to break into the business, tag Jackie. She's always looking for talent, and you've got to earn it. This is 30 years, you know, experience, but Jackie's always there for folks and add some value, and she'll be right there. Jackie, thank you for everything you do, and as always, guys, what will you start up today? I'll see you next Sunday. Be safe.